everyone. I'm Alex West.
And I'm Andrea Subisati, and we're from the Faculty of Horror podcast.
And you're listening to the Zombie Girls podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 49. 49! Almost to 50 of the Zombie Girls podcast. It's only taken a decade, but we're almost there. I'm your host, Rachel, and joining me today are my fabulous co-hosts, Matilda.
Hi there.
Jody.
Hello.
Sarah.
Hi.
And Ariel. Just kidding. Ariel can't figure out Skype, so she'll be joining us later. So, for this week, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Instead of having a what you've been watching followed by a review, we have been watching so much good stuff. We're just going to focus on, like, it's going to just be a grab bag episode, basically. We're going to talk about a handful of things we've seen. There are a couple of things that came out this month that are, we have to talk about sort of in depth, but we didn't want to just dedicate a whole episode to one of those things because, you know, then they'd be super outdated. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be covering all the stuff that we have been watching in the month of May. Uh-huh. We're still in May, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to do a kind of focused reviews on Alien Covenant, because, of course, we can't just let that go by without talking about it. And my current absolute obsession, A Handmaid's Tale. And then I think we're going to also talk about Raw. I haven't seen that one personally, but I'm looking forward to hearing what you ladies think about it.
I'm looking forward to talking about that. Yeah.
Yes, along with a handful of other really interesting things that we've been seeing. So how are you guys doing? I haven't even let you talk yet. How are you guys doing tonight? Today? This morning? Wherever you are on the time zone.
Pretty good. Sacred
spectrum.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good, good, yeah. Good. All right, well, let's get started. I know that Jody and Ariel are... Not Jody and Ariel. Jody and Sarah are feeling pretty good right now. What are you guys drinking?
I'm drinking a Desperado, which is, it's advertised as beer with tequila, but I think it's just beer flavored with something that tastes like tequila.
That doesn't sound delicious.
Yeah, it's nice and refreshing. And I was just telling Sarah before that we're having a heat wave and she laughed because it's like, 75 degrees. And she's like, yeah, that's not a heat wave.
Well, that's because Sarah lives directly on the sun.
Mm. Yeah.
How about you, Sarah? What are you drinking on the sun?
I am drinking a Crown Royal rye.
And can you tell the audience what time it is?
Hey, don't judge me. I have been awake since 4 this morning. I am now in my 6th hour of consciousness.
Yeah, it's 10 a.m.
It is a holiday weekend.
It is a holiday weekend.
That's right.
Yes, right, right. Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
And I work nights. This is my happy hour.
Mm-hmm. Admitting you have a problem is the first step. Okay, so all right, so Sarah, before you pass out from all your rye, what have you been watching?
Been watching a couple things. Was hoping to be able to watch a few more things, but unfortunately life gets in the way of that. One that I did see that was really cool, and I know that we have talked about it, you know, offline a few times, or through Facebook Messenger a few times, it was The Lure, which...
Oh, yes.
It actually is either a 2015 or 2016 movie. It had been making the rounds in the festival circuit, but it was released on VOD just a few weeks ago, like maybe 2 weeks ago or so, and... it's a Polish film about musical mermaids. And
That sounds amazing.
The preview looks incredible that you sent us. Like the trailer.
Yeah, I mean it was really good. I mean the music is great. Basically these two sisters who are mermaids end up being adopted by a singer at a burlesque club. And they become performers, and you know, one of them falls in love, and the other one wants to go back to the sea because they had plans to, you know, they were going to hang out here in this town for a little while and do what they do, and then they were going to, you know, head off and swim to America. And you know, it's like one of them just wants to live the mermaid life, and the other one falls in love with a human, and kind of an interesting rift on the original Little Mermaid tale, mm-hmm. which, if you know about that, it's actually, you know, pretty violent and really kind of sad at the end.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
So you recommend it?
I absolutely recommend it. I'm really hoping this comes out, like, on a Criterion, because I believe it's actually... it's Janus Films that's distributing it, and they're a subsidiary of Criterion. I'm really hoping it comes out soon on Blu-ray, because I'd really like this, and I really want a copy of the soundtrack.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, the trailer looked like what I wanted Moulin Rouge to be.
Yes.
But was not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really want to watch it.
I can see that. Yeah.
I still want that elephant room for Moulin Rouge. I want you to live in that room.
Yeah, well, it's now available for rent on Amazon Prime. It was released about 2 weeks earlier on Google Play only.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. let's see. I also recently saw Hounds of Love, which just came out, I think, like last week. It's a Australian film about a couple who kidnap teenagers and torture them and about... like basically the last victim. You know, you think kind of the way that the movie is, it's going to be a lot more violent, and considering some of the stuff that Jody and I have seen, as far as like actual violence, this was pretty tame. Like it's more implied, like, you know, the husband and wife decide that they're gonna, you know, play with their victim, and it's like they go into the room and you can see her start to struggle, and then the door closes and you hear the screaming, and then it's like the aftermath of, you know, him sitting there smoking a cigarette and the wife changing the sheets kind of thing. So,
oh God,
it's actually a pretty good look on like the manipulative nature of those kind of relationships.
Like the dynamics of those relationships.
Yeah. Cause the wife character actually has kids from a previous marriage, and all she wants is her kids back. The victim is telling her, well, you know, he only got you this dog because he doesn't want the kids, right? You know, he wants to distract your attention. Meanwhile, he's obsessing. He's like, I don't know what it is about you. He's telling this to the victim. He's like, I don't know what it is about you, but, you know, my wife and I normally play together, but I really want you for myself. And, you know, so she sees that fracturing and starts to play on it.
Oh, uh-huh.
So,
interesting. Yeah. But, so no, is this
based on a true story? I gave a fair warning to Rachel, because I know this one was on her list. There is some not so lightly implied animal violence. The way the scene is shot, you don't actually see the violence, but you know it's happening.
Sometimes the sounds are even worse.
Yeah.
So thank you. I appreciate that warning. So now, is this based on a true story?
Yeah, apparently it is, but I'm not familiar with the case.
So there was also that one that came out a few years ago from Australia that was like this. Oh God, what was I blanking on it now?
Snowtown.
You guys know what I'm talking. Snowtown. Yes.
Yeah.
Oof. Like, what's going on in Australia?
Too much sun, I think. Too much sun. Too much open space.
Big spiders.
Kill you. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the spiders are an underrated reason for violence. You know, sure. Like, yes. I feel like it's a stronger ingredient in that, like, in violence
for
cocktail.
Psychological terror.
Yes. I mean, you have to live in constant fear of, like, I accidentally saw a picture of a giant spider dragging a rat the other day. Fuck the internet, dude. Why does it do this to me? And I mean, I feel like if you're living in that sort of atmosphere, like, you know, that would be tough.
Yeah,
that'd be tough on the old psyche.
I think it creates something, you know, something very hard.
Right. Our like one Australian listener just canceled his subscription. JK, we love you and Oz.
Keep your spiders. Every episode ends up with us just blaming spiders for everything.
I think we're the brave ones who are willing to admit when no one else wants to say that it's the spiders. Okay, like, I'm sorry, the other podcasts don't have the balls to say it, but here at the Zombie Girls, we're gonna call those eight-legged fuckers out.
Yeah, we tell it how it is.
So if I live with one, what
I would say, how's your pet spider, by the way?
Well, Rachel, do you ever see that video that I posted on Jody's page about the the glitter reflection in your lawn?
I didn't watch the video you posted on my page, Sarah.
What are you talking about? Are you about to besmirch the reputation of glitter?
So long story short,
pinged on my Facebook, Sarah shared a video to your wall. I'm like, yep, not watching that. Thank you.
Hold on, long story short, Rachel and Jody, is if you go outside at night with a flashlight and shine it on your lawn and you see something that looks like glitter in your lawn, those are actually spider eyes.
No! Mm. No! Why would you say that? No!
Well, wasn't it somewhere? I know it's somewhere on the north side of the West Coast that they found a spider in a cave that hadn't been disturbed for like forever, and the spider actually has like teeth.
No, no, no!
Oh,
don't
wow.
That's not true. No, no.
Why are you doing this to us, Sarah?
No, like I can't like put my feet back on the floor.
Well, you know, it's kind of like I was trolling
it's not
you.
Not to be trusted.
Yeah, the next episode is my pick of movies. And I kept trolling the girls the entire time. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, Necromantic. Oh wait, no. That's not animal violence. So Necromantic too.
I know, you're such an asshole. Like, I lived in fear for that week. When you finally picked your topic, I was like, oh thank God. Oh thank God.
When I was on the way over here this morning, I heard on the radio that there's, I think it's the San Francisco Zoo has a tarantula exhibit right now. Mm-hmm. And they were interviewing kids there, and the kids were like, I did not like it. Like, they basically like came and interviewed Rachel and Jody at the tarantula exhibit. They were like, I was disturbed. I hated every minute.
I kind of and don't want to know about your pet spider, Matilda.
Yoda. Yeah. So Yoda, Mr. Matilda got Yoda when he was 19, so this spider is now 26 years old.
Wow.
Because it's the kind of pet you buy when you're like a 19-year-old dude, right? And you think that's like a 5-year commitment, but he keeps things alive forever. P.S. Like, please come euthanize me, because living with him, I'm going to be like 200 fucking years old.
Science.
How do your cats coexist with that?
Yeah, he had a praying mantis that lived for like years. Oh, God.
How the cats deal with Yoda?
Yeah, no. It was not Mary.
I see what you did there.
So the spider lives in a little terrarium, like a little fish tank. It does not come out.
Well, because it came out once and almost got away.
Yeah, it came out once and like ran up the wall. And I was like, I'm going to the store. This is your problem. I'll see you later. Because I'm a compassionate partner. And he was like pulling on gloves when I left. I'm like,
No!
I was like, this is why you don't get a pet you're freaked out by.
Well, their little hairs are itchy.
Oh, yeah. It definitely isn't poisonous. It's a rose hair tarantula. But it's old. Like, I think the lifespan is, I'm pretty sure it's a zombie. And every year I think it's done. I think it's done for, because I come back to the spider cage and there's like a pile of spider in the corner.
Ugh.
And it's molting. Like, oh, Yoda has passed this mortal coil. Yeah. And then, no, Yoda's like, shiny and new on the other side.
That spider's in that training just like, I will walk on your graves. All right, so anything else you wanted to say about Hounds of Love, Sarah, before I hijacked with my spider?
That's what we were talking about,
psychosis.
Okay. other than it's actually a really good movie, and I recommend checking it out if you're not sensitive to animal violence,
if you're a soulless bastard who wants to see a dog die.
No Speaking judgment. Of being soulless, oh. If my soul was a town, it would be Fortitude.
Oh, that was an excellent segue. So tell us about Fortitude, Sarah.
Well, Fortitude is on Amazon. I'm not sure if it's an Amazon original or not, but the first season has Stanley Tucci, probably the most notable actor on there. There is a small bit part with Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, yeah.
But he only lasts about an episode.
Spoiler.
But I'm only about 5 episodes in on the first season, but I am enjoying the hell out of this. Like, there's something very bad in that permafrost, and you know, the atmosphere is great, the characters of the town are great. There's a lot of shady dealings going on, and right now it seems that like everyone's a suspect.
Well, what is Fortitude about?
Okay, well, the first season is about the mayor, the, well, I guess she's the governor, is what they call her, the governor of Fortitude, is getting ready to open this great big ice hotel to bring tourism, right?
Because it's like a little town.
Fortitude is this town that's like, yeah. I guess it's supposed to be the farthest north town in Norway, or it's run by Norway.
So it's like in the Arctic Circle or something.
Yeah, it's like on the Arctic Circle.
Killer polar bears.
To bring in tourism, you know, she wants to build this ice hotel. And what happens is two guys who are working the local mine up there, they come across a mammoth frozen in the permafrost, and they dig it up. And it's about what happens when Christopher Eccleston plays a scientist who these guys are like, you know, they try and sell him the mammoth. And he's like, no, you don't understand. You found something scientific, therefore under law, you have to give it to me. I don't buy it. You have to give it to me. So it's about what happens when he's the guy who basically signs off and says, yeah, the ice hotel is good to go. Let's go ahead and drill into the side of the mountain. Now, all of a sudden, he's changing his mind. The governor's trying to figure out what's going on and cover her tracks, because if this hotel doesn't go off, she basically loses everything. And along with that, there is like a raging polar bear like on the outskirts of the village, and the sheriff, there's something going on with the sheriff. Yeah. And I'm not 100% sure what's going on right now, because like I said, I'm only like 5 episodes in, but there's definitely a cover up with the sheriff, and somebody dies, and like I said, the mayor, the sheriff, and a few other people are trying to like cover up evidence and stuff, and somebody says, well, you know what? The person who dies is a British citizen. Therefore, this isn't Norwegian law. This is British law. We need to bring somebody in from the UK. And that's how Stanley Tucci ends up getting involved.
Hmm. And that's how Jody got involved. Yeah, I've heard it described as sort of like sci-fi horror, which made I was intrigued. So I've only had time to watch the first episode, and it is definitely dripping with atmosphere. And it has sort of like a, I don't want to say Twin Peaksy vibe, because it doesn't have that sort of surrealistic kind of off-kilter humor to it. It is very very serious. But it definitely has the, like, all the characters on the surface level seem normal, but then there's like sort of hidden depths. You know,
like everybody's screwing everybody else and trying to cover it up in one way or another.
But it's interesting. It like opens with like someone being mauled by a polar bear, and like someone else just like shooting him to take him out of his misery. Like, I don't even think they shoot the polar bear. He just shoots the guy he's eating.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've only seen the first episode, but I'll second your recommendation. So far, so good.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. How about you, Ariel? What have you been watching?
Well, the other day I got to see Logan finally. You had told me that I should see it. And I really enjoyed it a lot. But it's kind of one of those movies that I'm not sure I'd ever want to see again.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, I loved it. I thought the acting was amazing. Hugh Jackman did a great job. So did Patrick Stewart. But it's so bleak that I don't know if I'd ever want to, like, live through that again, if that makes sense.
Total sense.
But I thought it was really fun, and in some other ways, like, the action was really great. You never got to see so much violence and blood in the other X-Men movie, and the sort of mini Wolverine was really exciting. Mm-hmm. Watching her fight was great.
Yeah. Yes. Listen to me and Matilda were like, yes!
Yeah, you're a very violent, rule. Like, little girl. I'm so happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree.
Yeah, that's right up your alley.
Yeah. I feel like it's impossible to go back to like a PG-13 Wolverine after that, because it was always a little absurd how little damage his hands did. And now that we've like actually seen what we knew they were capable of.
Once he's like cutting off heads and arms,
which is great.
A
lot. I'm so glad you liked it.
I mean, it was really, really great, but it also made me cry.
So, oh yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I cried a couple times in that movie.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I also started watching Riverdale.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I actually am enjoying it, and I didn't think that I would. I mean, it has like a mystery element to it, which always draws me in. So that part, I kind of knew I'd probably like that part, but I wasn't sure about the rest. I actually grew up like reading Archie comics. My family used to take road trips to Montana every year, and my dad would get me like Garfield and Archie comic books. So it's definitely weird seeing some of the choices they made, like with Mrs. Grundy,
yeah,
for instance, you know, taking her from being this sort of shrill older teacher with the like sharp bun to being this like 30-something who's getting it on with a student.
I believe the word you're looking for is pedophile.
Yes, thank you. I think that is the word we're looking for, actually.
When confronted about it, one of the characters says, well, the character that's having an affair with a student, because it just hit Netflix. The season just finished. It hit Netflix like a week later. I don't want to spoil it, but the one that's having the affair with Mrs. Grundy's, it gets confronted by Betty, and he's like, well, you don't understand. And she's like, what, that she's a pedophile?
I'm like, get it, Betty. Get it. Yeah, I don't know. I was very irritated by the resolution of that, because it was like, it underlines sort of this double standard we have about teacher-student relationships, where like, if it were Betty or Veronica getting railed by a male, like, hot teacher, there's no way they would be like, it's cool, just pack up your car. Oh. You know what I mean?
But unless it's Pretty Little Liars.
Alice
Cooper would have, you know, sent the Southside Serpents after him if that had been Betty.
Exactly. Whereas, because it's a male character, so that, I mean, I honestly, Betty, it, to me, is the saving grace of that show. I'm the sole dissenter that I'm not super into it, but I've gone back and started rewatching it because I had read something about how season two is going to start, like, including more, like, horror and sci, you know what I mean, like there's supposedly gonna be like a Lovecraft kind of thing happening in
really?
The second season.
Yeah. Okay, I was wondering, because they're kind of hinting at something going on with Betty that's like,
okay,
you know, kind of supernatural, but I didn't know if they were actually going to go there, if it was just going to be one of those things, oh no, she has a mental health issue or something.
So that to me, it's intriguing. So I've kind of like, it's the thing I'm watching in the background while I do other things.
Yeah.
Because I think my problem is I powerfully dislike Archie.
That's, yeah. Is it just me, or does he have a giant head?
He's, I mean, metaphorically and physically, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's like a bobblehead. I don't know. I do like Jughead, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's okay.
But yeah, Archie is really annoying. I mean, even the other characters, they make like references to works of fiction, to movies. You know, they reference like Mildred Pierce and The Wallpaper. Not every high school student is going to recognize that stuff, but they all seem to, except for Archie, who doesn't seem to know who anyone is.
I found out who Yoko Ono was.
Yeah, exactly. It's really obnoxious.
I mean, I think that's definitely a nod towards like all the grown-ups that are still watching CW, because we started watching Supernatural like 55 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
But the thing is, though, is that Archie as a whole was kind of a clueless character.
Yeah, that's fair. It's absolutely true. And Jughead was the one who was like, he sort of seemed like he wasn't in the know, but then he would often be the one, like the voice of reason. And anyways, I think it's a fun show. There are points at which the sort of the teen melodrama stuff gets a little bit irritating, but for the most part I've been having fun with it, so I don't know, I would recommend it, but I haven't finished the season. I think I'm only like 9 episodes in right now.
All right, so
yeah, so that's it.
Should I stick it out then?
Yeah, I think I'm going to. Okay. And I think you should too. We'll check it out again next season, and then we can call it quits if it like royally sucks when they add the supernatural.
I'm like, come on, some good Lovecraftian Cthulhu stuff.
That would be amazing if they actually did that and did it well.
All right, Jody, I need to hear the dulcet tones of your voice. So,
okay.
What have you been watching?
A few things that have come up on previous Zombie Girl shows a long time ago, so I won't spend too much time on them. One of them was 10 Cloverfield Lane, which was on everyone's like best of last year's horror list. And it was one that I'd missed, so I finally caught up with it. And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, good.
I would urge everyone to watch it without finding out too much about it, if you can help it. I think a few things have leaked out kind of naturally, but I saw it. Yeah, not knowing very much, and I thought it was great. Really, really good sort of modern horror movie.
Can you weigh in and say who's the crazy one, me or Matilda? I find the scenes where she is in the ducts to be very upsetting, and she found them to be very soothing. Which one of us is crazy?
What do you each say about that scene?
I say incredibly uncomfortable and tense. She says incredibly soothing, and she thinks that she should just stay in the ducks.
Oh, no, no, I'm with Rachel. Uncomfortable and tense, like, 100%.
No, Matilda's nuts.
I'm clear I'm the crazy opinion. Yeah.
Like, I just rewatched The Descent the other day, forgetting how scary it is, and the scariest part is when Sarah gets stuck in that little bit.
Yes.
And then it just kind of starts to close in around her and her makeup. Move, move, move.
Ooh, I'm like, go to sleep.
Yeah, that part's the worst. I hated that scene. Fucking, like, it's so literal hard to goosebumps. Watch.
Yeah.
You guys.
So hey, Jenny, I had a question about that. Yeah. I actually wanted to show that to my niece. She's like 15, but it's been so long since I've seen it. I couldn't remember if there was anything inappropriate or too scary. What do you think?
I mean, I think it's really scary. But then it may, like, my own sort of, like, you know, semi claustrophobia maybe brings that along, so I don't think there's anything really sort of inappropriate, because I mean, there's nothing like really sexual in there, because it's
yeah,
and there's no, I mean, I don't think there's any super gross. Is this like the same niece that you were saying that you were trying to show some things to that she
yes
was, yeah, yeah, I'd say give it a
okay,
a whirl.
Cool, thank you.
How old is she?
15.
She's 15.
Oh, she's fine.
I'd say about right.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Gotta crush her spirit as early as possible.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
She's gonna have her own podcast perfect. One day and go, yeah, my Auntie Ariel showed me The Descent when I was 15. And so another one that you mentioned, I'm trying to remember where this came up. I think it maybe was on a ZGBG way back, was The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Yeah.
And I won't go into too much depth because Rachel and I had an extensive conversation about it on a private chat. I thought that was great. I almost feel like it didn't need to be a found footage movie, though. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what you thought about that part, Rachel.
I was fine with it because, like, in terms of the subject matter, it makes more sense. Like, what would be the framing device of why they are? Would you rather have, like, the camera pulled out so you're the camera person is in frame? Do you think
I guess more like just we're here doing a, because it's she's writing a thesis or something, right, about dementia and about the effects of that on the family. Maybe if that was just the only framing and no camera at all, it might have been stronger, because that's a good conceit to start with. But eventually, and you get it with every single fan footage movie where you're going, you would have dropped the camera by now. But they always frame it with a, you know, people have to know about this, we have to keep filming and we have to keep documenting this. But they lose that, I thought, quite early on. But it's still really, really effective when they're going through that kind of abandoned house at the end. Because every time the camera goes around the corner, you go, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it was terrifying, but not in a... I thought I knew what I was going to be seeing based on the premise. And they don't take a bunch of... what's the word I'm looking for? Like they treat it with respect, I suppose. I thought it was going to be quite degrading to the main character. And it wasn't. They don't have her really doing anything that's super, like, embarrassing, like swearing or, you know, anything like that.
There's some nudity, but I feel like it's used so effectively.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. I thought it would do the Exorcist thing, like, you know, just having her swearing and just saying offensive things. And they don't do anything like that. And there's some medical stuff at the start that I found quite kind of hard to watch. But yes. I thought it was a really, really strong movie. So I definitely recommend that.
Jill Larson plays Deborah Logan, and her performance is, I think, actually really incredible. She's like an actor who did like soaps and stuff like that, and you realize how totally underutilized she's been, because the things that she's asked to do in this movie and the transformation that takes place in this movie is so incredible.
Yeah,
so good. If you haven't seen Taking of Deborah Logan, I highly recommend it. I'm so glad you liked it, Jody.
Oh, I loved it.
I feel like it's underrated.
Yeah, I think in the UK it's just called The Taking. If people are trying to find it, I think it's just called The Taking. Oh. And I've just remembered you did a Scream Queens. It wasn't a ZGBG. It was a Scream Queens, Stream Queens episode that you did on it. So yeah, I listened to that after having seen it. Yeah, that's a high recommend. Yeah. Another one I saw was Get Out, and I don't know if you talked about it on the last cast that I wasn't on or not.
But I still am always interested in hearing. I'm actually especially interested to hear your perspective, because it feels like such an American story that I wonder if it's not, though. I wonder if it's something that, like, you can really identify with in the UK, or if it's a universal story. So I'm really interested to hear what you think.
I think it is a universal story, and I think it's just very interesting. I mean, I'm watching it, you know, as a white lady watching it, you know, but like all of the little kind of I just loved how they blended this the kind of subtle everyday racism with the kind of overblown, you know, just out of this world stuff, and how it just felt so real. Every time someone would say to him, you know, oh, my parents aren't racist, you know, they voted for Obama, and he'd go, you know, just kind of roll his eyes a little bit and, know, kind of like, oh, it's fine. But, you know, like, you know, he's just getting it like day in and day out. Yeah. And there are things that people have pointed out to me since that mean that I want to go back and watch it already. Like, just little tiny things. Like, I don't want to give away too many spoilers. Has everyone seen it?
If you haven't seen it.
No, I've been meaning to.
Okay, I won't say anything. Oh. All right, I'll send you some messages privately, Rachel, just to tell you a couple of things that people have pointed out. Like, oh, shit, that's very clever, and I want to watch that.
Oh, I'm interested in that, yeah.
Mm. Ariel, cover your ears for 1 minute.
Oh, no, that's okay.
I'm going to take my headphones out.
No, that's okay. I think not enough people have seen it for me to say, so I'll
pass. It was like, that movie made, like, so much money. It was, like, the number one movie forever. So yeah. I think a lot of people have seen it, and they can skip forward, like, 2 minutes if they need to. But I would love to hear, because I actually really want to hear what you
yeah.
was pointed out to you, because in case we missed it.
Okay, what now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, well, I mean, the main one that sticks in my mind is how he escapes from the chair. You know, he's kind of scratching at the chair, picking cotton out of the chair, you know, that kind of thing. So I'd really, really, really want to watch it again, just noticing all these other things that were in there too.
There's also you should research stuff about, like, the origin of Young Buck as it relates to black men during Jim Crow and post-slavery, because there's a whole motif about, like, the deer getting hit at the beginning, and then how he dispatches the guy, you know what I mean, like, all that stuff, like, and the hunting of them, and it all kind of comes. I didn't know about this till I saw the movie, but, like, there is a lot, there's so much depth to this and so much symbolism that, like, what I love about it is it, like, rips back the veneer of, like, liberal racism in a way that, like, you know, like, we're the good guys. You know, we're not conservatives who hate black people. We voted for Obama, but we're also the ones that are peeking through our blinds and calling 911 when a guy in a hoodie walks down the street. You know what I mean? But then, like, being, like, you know, progressive in your face. And I like how it ties those things all the way back through the history of, like, American racism and slavery.
Yeah.
But, like, it's so, and it's so, at the same time, even though it does go back into all that, like, it's still so, like, current day and present, and
there's also, like, as we're talking about, like, cultural appropriation, there's, like, literal appropriation of a body, right?
Yes.
There's kind of, like, white liberal racism that's about kind of, like, I want that, like, I'm attracted to this and I want pieces of it, but it's very literal
pieces, right? Exactly.
So even the parts where, you know, the lady says to the girlfriend, so, you know, is it true, you know, these rumors that I hear about black men, and like, kind of, that's not racist, I'm saying something great about you, and he's like, you're still making a sweeping generalization about me just because of the color of my skin.
And sort of the objectification of, like, black male sexuality is so pervasive, and, like, going back to, like, the Mandingo stuff, like, it manages to pack all this stuff in and make you really laugh. And, like, I mean, like, we saw it in an audience where we were, like, pretty much the only white folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And, like, there was this desire to be like, no, but I'm one of the good ones. But that's exactly the problem, you know, mean, that it gets at. So, like, it was funny. We were walking out. There were, like, people around us being like, I hope the right people see this. I hope they get the message. I was like, loud and clear. Loud and clear.
Something really funny that happened this month. I mean, it's not really funny, but it's a little funny. My mother and her friend have, like, a standing movie date where they just go see highly rated movies. So they went and saw this not knowing anything about it.
Really?
They knew nothing. They just knew, like, it was the best rated movie this year. So they, like, you know, and they're usually seeing, like,
Love and Friendship or something.
Yes, like wonderful British film about, like, you know, the complexities of aging, right? And so they went and saw Get Out. And my mother loved it, and her friend was, like, not ready.
Really?
Yeah, he was, like, well, not ready in terms of, like, he was like, what the hell did I just watch? I don't think he watches horror. But my mother said something interesting, which is that it really reminded her of the Stepford Wives.
Oh, yes.
All the Stepford Wives stuff is really strong. Yeah.
Yes. Which is something we should probably revisit sometime on the show. We should do a Stepford Wives episode.
I love it.
All right, let me tell Ariel.
I can see that.
Back.
I don't think we've ever seen it.
Oh, you haven't?
I don't think so, no.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, you need to see it.
I must give you the recipe.
I must give you the recipe. Yeah.
That's such a great movie.
Awesome. I'm so glad you liked it. So we didn't steer you too wrong with our recommendations.
Oh, no, totally.
That's good. That's good.
And the only thing, the other thing I want to mention is kind of a disappointment, which is a real shame because I really was really looking forward to this movie called The Eyes of My Mother.
I've heard such good things about this. Not good, huh?
Well, I mean, not horrible, but just a little disappointing. It's shot in all black and white, and it's just a pretty interesting like setup of a girl who her parents both die, and she's living alone on this farm. And her mother was an eye surgeon, and she used to practice on cows and things, you know. So it's all eyes everywhere. Which, like, eyes are like, yeah, no, thank you.
Matilda is grinning ear to ear right now. She's right. Like, oh, hello.
Yeah, maybe that's why I don't like spiders, because they have too many eyes. But it kind of, like, I just felt like there wasn't really a very strong narrative. It reminded me a little of Excision. Do you guys ever see Excision?
Oh, okay. Yes, that's you liked Excision. That's the girl at the end. She cuts her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So in the way that movie, I mean, that's got like kind of a loose narrative, but it's mainly kind of just like little weird set pieces of her interacting with people at school or with boys or with her parents or whatever, but kind of with this medical theme sort of going through. Yeah. It reminded me a little of that. So I was a little underwhelmed, but it did highlight my dislike of mouth noises in movies, which took hold when I saw The Handmaiden as well, in a different way.
It's called misophonia, and I have it too, girlfriend.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. I'm glad I'm not alone.
It's the worst.
Yeah. So that was the problem in Raw as well, which we'll get to in a sec. But I think I first noticed it when there's a French movie called In My Skin. Have you guys ever seen In My Skin?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it sounds very interesting, and I couldn't finish it because of this mouth noise. It's a lady who it's a French movie, and she's at a party and she cuts her leg in an accident. She becomes like obsessed with the wound, and she's prodding it and playing with it, which I don't know where it goes. I didn't, because she starts like eating her skin, and you can just hear, you know. And I just had to switch it off. I just couldn't.
Blah.
Yeah. No. Okay. So The Eyes of My Mother. I mean, like it was something a bit different, and it was very. It looked really great. It was filmed in black and white, and the cinematography I thought was really great. Overall, I was just a bit underwhelmed. But you know, I think it's a female filmmaker, and you know, I think it's some Portuguese American release. I think.
Oh.
So something a bit different. I mean, it's on Netflix. I'm just a bit underwhelmed.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, at least here in the U.S. So
okay.
For people who are curious and enjoy the mouth sounds and eyeball violence.
Yeah,
ta-da!
You go ahead. I could care less. So,
yeah. Awesome, awesome.
That's good.
All right, Matilda, how about you? What have you been watching?
So I've been watching a few things. I feel like there's just a critical mass of everything I'm interested in right now, so I'm having trouble keeping up with all the things I want to see.
Yes.
So
I know what you mean.
And part of that is that, so Twin Peaks is back.
Yes.
And I was a huge Twin Peaks person, and I've only seen the first two. Like, I somehow haven't, like, really, and if it was any other time when other stuff wasn't coming at me so fast, I would be, like, totally focused on this. But, so I've seen the first two. Has anybody else seen any of them?
No, I'm mid, rewatch right now, because I was getting ready to watch it because... You know, obviously, I loved Twin Peaks when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was absolutely obsessed with Audrey Horne. Obsessed. Yeah. I would go, I was young enough that I was still like playing in the backyard, and I would go in the backyard and pretend Twin Peaks.
That's so cute.
But I guess. I don't know. So,
yeah.
But then I listened to like a spoiler free review of it, and they were like, you have to have seen all of season and season two to get into this, or where it starts will make no sense.
Yeah.
So, and
yeah,
I
haven't
that
seen
too.
It.
So I've been trying to.
So I have
make
not.
Time to get caught up.
I agree with that. You've got to kind of know the mythology of the Black Lodge, and you've got to.
Yeah.
You also need to have seen the Fire Walk with Me movie.
Right. I saw it came out.
Yeah. And have. And but I think there's some stuff that actually repeats. That you need to
so I'm gonna totally finish my rewatch and then dig into it, and by then it'll probably be done, so I can marathon it.
Yeah. And there's other cameos, like there's more people on this that...
Yeah, I have questions how some of the cast is in this new one, because I'm like, wait, what, how, but what,
right? So like, this doesn't spoil anything, but in the first episode, Ben Horn's new secretary is Ashley Judd.
Really?
Okay. Yeah,
that's interesting.
I'll say this. I think it's going to be great for people who really love Twin Peaks. If Twin Peaks irritated you at all, this will irritate the shit out of you.
It's like peak Twin Peaks?
It's peak Twin Peaks.
don't watch it with a wife. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
She's not a fan, huh?
Oh, no.
It's a challenge watch, I think. If you were kind of half in, half out of Twin Peaks, then this is probably not for you.
Like, I like it when there's like a little person talking backwards and dancing in a red room.
Yes.
That's for me.
Yes. Yeah, but there's a lot of, yes, right away. So if you like that stuff right away, you're going to be all the way back in. And a lot of the aesthetics are preserved. But what is really fun in the first couple episodes is that you see some characters who are returning. And it's so rare that we get to see actors who are not like deep Hollywood just 25 years later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so just to see like people aging on screen is awesome to me. But we've seen like Shelley and James and Dr. Jacoby. So, you know,
Dr. Jacoby's still kicking, huh?
Dr. Jacoby looks exactly the same.
Really?
Yeah.
Since I'm rewatching, I got to the part where he's like listening to Laura's tape and like crying while looking into the coconut.
Oh.
Jody, you really need to watch Twin Peaks.
I need to sort it out.
Get ready to fall in love with Dr. or with Agent Dale Cooper.
Yeah, who I married.
Oh my god. And yeah, I feel like Jody, you would really like it. It's super off kilter and weird. It is the only, like, even if you don't like Lynch, this is the most accessible Lynch.
Okay. Especially the first like season and a half.
Yeah. He got kicked off halfway through season two. And other showrunners tried to come in and they were like, I mean, like, who takes over a Lynch project? And like, I got this. Yeah. No, you don't.
I read him like talking about it now, saying that he doesn't like season two. He wishes it wasn't there. Basically.
Well, he also didn't want to solve
the problem. Sense.
I know part of the problem was that kind of like how in Riverdale, as it's the season progresses, it becomes less of, like, Who Murdered Jason Blossom just sort of was like a backstory to everything else going on. Mm-hmm. And that's what Lynch originally wanted with Twin Peaks, was that you never found out who murdered Laura Palmer, because it was just like her death was just a catalyst for all the town's secrets coming up. It wasn't it wasn't the main thing, and the network just kept pressuring him.
Well, they probably felt pressure.
The network kept pressuring him to have it done by the beginning of season two, and that was basically when he was just like, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like The Killing tried to do that, you know, what happened to Rosie Larson. When they didn't solve it by the end of the first season, fans were outraged. And the fact that it took all the way through like the second season, people were pissed. So I can understand why there was pressure to make a definitive ending to that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But maybe it would have been better if they had never done it.
Well, because then where do you go in season two? You know what I mean? I remember like Billy Zane shows up in a plane.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Because and it's like a new love interest for Audrey, but it should be Cooper and only Cooper.
Yeah.
That's the pedophilia I'm down with.
Is Audrey Horning Cooper?
And Cooper, yeah. Because I just saw the part where they meet for the first time and he's like, ring, when he sees her walking in.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, they had so much chemistry.
I mean, yeah.
So like my childhood, like my ideal couples in childhood were Dale Cooper and Audrey Horne.
Yes.
And Clarice Starling. And Hannibal Lecter.
That's great.
It's like when you had Barbies next to each other. That's who that, yeah.
Anyway.
I will say there's something, I don't want to spoil this, but there is some Coop storyline in this season.
Uh-huh.
Where his styling.
I've seen a picture where he has long hair and it's upsetting. I don't, I want,
he looks
I want
like Glenn Danzig with a spray tan. It's like, not great. It's not great. It's really messing with my extreme Dale Cooper erotic transference, which then which then became like Stephen Colbert in character erotic transference, because that's the same character.
Yeah. Damn fine cup of coffee.
But I think if you like Twin Peaks, it's candy.
Okay.
And it's from what I've read, it's going to be 18-hour-long episodes. Ooh. So there's a lot there. So I'm trying to go a little slow because it's a lot to absorb.
Oh, my God. I'm like, digging back into it and just, like, yeah. It's just as good as I remember.
Andy and Lucy are back in the first
episode.
Oh,
really? Yeah. Oh, Hawk, don't tell him I cried.
Yeah.
Oh, Jody, you gotta watch Twin Peaks.
I will.
In 2 years,
I think you'll be glad you did. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, I think here's the thing: is now that X Files is terrible, you need something to replace it, and I think Twin Peaks might be that thing.
Yeah. So I've been watching that, and I'm looking forward to that. The other thing I saw, I went and saw on Easter Sunday. We went and saw Raw.
Oh, wow.
The little Easter Sunday fun. And Jody, I know you also saw this, right?
Yeah, I hope you didn't eat too many chocolate eggs before you went in.
No, we saw it in a, like, food and beer pizza. So
oh,
I just ate.
Oh, my dirt. God. Tell what we're answering.
This is the part
ordered.
Where I'm. This is the part where my soul is dead. Uh-huh. It's like I can eat through anything.
Really?
Yeah. So can I.
Wow.
No, I can't. Mm. Food and horror should never mix.
Nope.
Yeah, so the scene, Jody, that I know you were like, oh my God, this scene is so terrible. I was like, oh, here we are, and I'm just like eating popcorn.
Nope.
Tell them what Mr. Matilda ordered.
Oh, yeah, so this might be a San Francisco problem, but they had something in the theater called a beet Reuben, B-E-E-T. And so okay. He thought, oh, okay, it's going to be a Reuben, but with, like, the slaw is going to be made out of beets. It was a vegan.
No, it was probably the meats made out of beet, right?
It was a vegan Reuben with beets instead of pastrami.
So imagine him eating a beet sandwich in raw.
Yeah.
He was bummed. Yeah. So, Jody, what did you think of Raw?
I think I liked it. It wasn't really what I was expecting. I thought it was going to be a lot more violent and a lot more visceral, I guess. So there's only really a few scenes that were really like that. The whole thing made me really, really uncomfortable with the all the hazing kind of stuff and the, what do you call it, like the pledge stuff, initiation stuff at university. So I don't know if that's really what it's like in vet schools in France or what, but that all made me really, really uncomfortable. And the few times that they do go really visceral and gross, it was really, really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. I thought the characters were very interesting, and the kind of psychology of doing the kind of things that they do and, you know, eating the kind of things that they eat. And, you know, I thought that was very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Did you like it?
Yeah. I loved it. Loved, loved, loved it. I mean, it's kind of for me, right? It has the... medical body horror, and it's kind of a female character who's starting to kind of have and understand inappropriate desire, which all of that is totally up my alley. Yeah, and I really the waxing scene,
oof,
yep,
was great.
Oh. I love the two reactions.
Like opposite reactions.
Yeah, everything just made me squirm.
Yeah, it's a really squirmy, it's uncomfortable. Even like the very first scene where she's sitting in a restaurant with her parents is disgusting and uncomfortable to watch somebody eat mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, but there's eating stuff again.
Yeah, so it is a point with the food stuff, because I don't have the misophonia stuff, so I don't know about like how much chewing.
Right.
Or I don't know how noisy that is, but there's grotesqueness all throughout this.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, I was trying to think about, Jody, you can tell me what you think. Like, what do you think of the level of animal violence in this for people who are.
For me.
It's one of those things where, like, Rachel asked about it and I thought, oh, I don't remember any, but maybe I'm just not remembering it because I just expected that there would be loads. So I feel like it was more dead animal carcasses, like in the vet school, than actual violence towards living animals. But I don't know if I'm misremembering it now.
No, that's what I remember too. There's like cadavers.
Okay. Yeah.
And so there's no conscious animals. There's also a horse who's having surgery, but he's.
Yeah.
Surgery is not a problem for me.
The horse is under anesthesia.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know I have weird arbitrary rules, but surgery is fine.
And there's, and I don't remember.
It's a healing situation as opposed to a harming.
I don't remember gore related to the cadavers.
No. I feel like maybe there's one or two kind of surgery practicing scenes, but I don't think it's gratuitous.
I think it's kind of incidental to the plot. Like, she's just in class.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I could do, like, one of these moves and not see the animal?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool.
Because I think the rest of it you might be super into.
I'm super curious to see it, for sure. Mm-hmm. But when I saw it was, like, a vet thing, I was like, and I knew it was going to, and it was fucking French. So I was like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Good.
But I do really want to see it.
There's a hair thing that really got to me.
Something about the waxing?
Yeah.
Hairs. Eating the wax with hair in it. More than that,
I don't want to say until you've seen it.
Okay. I don't want to spoil it, but okay. There's an overlapping thing we all have in common that I want to talk about, that hair scene.
Okay.
Overlapping.
Right.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
There's a way that we have some experience with the hair thing that all of us
Okay, well, now I have to see it. I need to figure out where the point of this Venn diagram is that you're trying. Where we all have a hair waxing thing.
No, it's not the waxing thing.
Oh, and you go like, yeah. What is it? Okay, so raw is a yes.
I think so. Jody, would you say it's a yes?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that I really enjoyed it. I liked a lot about it. It's a lot funnier than I was expecting it to be too. I liked a lot about it. I don't know if I really just enjoyed the experience of it or what, but I would recommend it to you guys for sure.
All right. Anything else? Oh yeah, you got a couple more things.
Oh yeah, my other one that I've been watching is The Keepers.
Oh my
on
God.
Netflix, which I finished this week.
Oh my gosh.
And it was kind of, Rachel, you and one other person had recommended this to me, which is a true crime documentary series on Netflix about a network of pedophiles kind of headed up by a Catholic priest.
Yeah. It is rough stuff.
It is really rough stuff.
Because it's like largely survivors telling their stories, for as far as I've gotten. I'm like 4 episodes in, maybe 5.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying, but absolutely compelling. And I am so in love with the two little old ladies that are like charging ahead with the investigation.
Yes.
Yeah. Like the one that's like the first outgoing a couple nights ago, and they're amazing.
Yeah.
The one that's like shy is so adorable.
Yes.
And
yes.
I just love that they just will not give up. That they are determined to get justice for Sister Kathy.
Yeah.
And in the first episode, they were like, they wanted to really work on it now because they're like, we don't know how many years we have left.
Yeah.
And they want to give it their all. It's so sweet.
So when they were in high school, a nun at their school was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And the killer has never been found. And they were all people at the school were very attached to this nun. So they're trying to figure out what happened.
So let me ask you this, because you finished it and I'm only partway through it. I kind of feel like it's not really a mystery because we know who the perpetrator is almost from the first episode. So that's what I'm wondering does it take a turn that makes it, because like, you know, for instance, when you're watching something like Making a Murderer or listening to Serial, like there is a mystery aspect to it.
Right.
Like, where you're unsure if they did it or the one about the Lisk killer killing season.
Right.
Like, you don't know who the killer is. You just see what they've done. And with this, I'm like, there isn't really a mystery because we know who's sort of leading the charge. I mean, there are additional people that are being added to it as time goes on, unnamed, like someone with a badge or whatever. But I don't know that it's a mystery. And I wonder, because there's like 6 episodes, though. Like, how long can they go without there being some kind of left turn? And is there a point at which it kind of takes a surprising turn?
I would say it's closer to the Killing Season.
Okay.
Than in solving a mystery. I feel like it is something that shows how far the reach.
Mm.
Like, when they get in there, like, how far the reach of this network is.
Mm.
And what the implications of that are, and how, and kind of the position of the church in terms of its social power. This is rough stuff, and you're right, the two women who are at the center of investigating this, and they're like their diligence, like going to the law library and pulling records of everything, and they have like, you know, senior lady skills around, yes, like navigating those, like pulling charts and pulling that stuff, bureaucracy. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the goals right there, right? Like, yeah. That's the kind of little old lady, totally, I want to be.
Yes, exactly.
Like the sleuth in the library.
Yes! I want to Miss Marple the fuck out of my dotage, dude.
Yes.
Exactly.
So who all has seen it? I mean, I've seen 4 episodes. You've seen all of it.
There's 7, yeah.
Jody, you've seen some of this, right?
I've just seen the first episode.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Just the first one.
What did you guys think?
Yeah, really interesting.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, they haven't mentioned any of the sexual abuse stuff yet, but I knew about that, sorry, before, someone else kind of warned me about it.
Sorry.
I knew already, because I think someone was, we were chatting about, you know, Making a Murderer and other kind of true crime documentaries and stuff, and someone said, oh, have you seen this? Oh, it does get pretty rough in terms of this kind of thing.
Yeah,
this is a kind
it
does. Of
it
trigger
sure
warning
does.
Kind of thing, but yeah, so I knew that was coming. But yeah, like those tour leaders are really sweet, and they're like, have you seen this thing called Facebook? It's really good. You get to talk to loads of people.
I love them so much.
Yeah.
So, Matilda,
has anybody watched the casting JonBenet one?
No, not yet.
Don't watch
really
it.
Good,
you liked it?
No, I heard it was really good.
Oh my god, I was just gonna say it was terrible.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
In what way?
It might be because I went in expecting something different than what it was. I thought it was gonna be a little more true crime, and all it really is a bunch of actors who are going to come in and sort of audition to play
so
different roles in a documentary,
the actors.
talking about sort of what they think about the case based on things that they've read or things they heard in the news back then. It's not very interesting. Nothing new is said. I just thought it was really uninteresting and boring.
That's
frankly. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, good stuff.
And oh, yes.
I remember I was going to ask Matilda. So, like, one of the things that kind of comes into play is, like, repressed memory and hypnosis. And I wanted to know, like, is that – because I wasn't sure if there was a twisty twist, but, like, if that was all kind of in line with how those sorts of things work.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it does remind me of some of the stuff that came out in the 90s about the
– yes. The satanic panic stuff and repressed
the satanic
memory.
Panic stuff and the stuff in the preschool in Texas, was it?
Oh,
right. Southwest somewhere, where there was the allegations that because the forensic interviewing techniques were so terrible.
Oh, are you talking about the McMartin case?
Yes.
That's Southern California, I thought.
This isn't the family one. This is the the daycare.
Yeah, where all the kids at the daycare were basically saying the same thing and none of it was true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like that makes things a little hazy, and I wanted to know.
So there's no hypnosis in this, because we know forensically that you don't do hypnosis if you want anything.
Right.
I mean, it's, you don't get forensically accurate things.
Right.
And it's always troublesome, right? Because memory is troublesome. If the four of us or the five of us talked about, like, this podcast later, we might all have different ideas, like particular ideas about what happened.
Sure.
But there is the woman who's, there's one person whose memories are more recovered in this than the other survivors are definitely people who have kind of known this all along.
Yeah.
Right. And are putting it together. But the person who's recovering memories is like, I don't have them in a therapist's office. I go home and I go think about things, and that's because I don't want any contamination.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty compelling.
Yeah.
It's pretty compelling.
It's powerful stuff, man.
Yeah.
This ain't for wimps. Like, it's like emotionally really pretty impactful.
Yes. And I think the combination of sexual abuse with the religious stuff, which I won't get into too much, is.
Yeah. All the gynecological
would be really,
stuff.
Really, as someone who has a lot, has half of my family was raised Catholic, and then I was forbidden to be Catholic. I feel, because I think people in my family were so freaked out by it, right? They really felt kind of damaged by their experiences in the church, not because of this kind of stuff, but I can imagine that if that's kind of the experience of a lay person, that like that plus sexual abuse could be, could feel really.
Yeah.
Could get all mixed up in a kind of like religious horror way. You know what I mean?
Hmm. We're going to be talking about religious horror in a little bit.
We are. Do you want to talk about it now? Is it on the list?
That's actually a really good segue. Should we talk about
it? Yeah. So the other thing I've been watching is The Handmaid's Tale. So okay. I know I talked about this on our last episode that I was so excited this was happening because this is my favorite book.
Yeah.
And yes. Did anybody else read it before you went in?
No, I'm going to read it as soon as it's done.
Yeah, that's what I decided too because I just knew I wasn't going to have the time and I wanted to be able to watch it for this episode.
So. Yeah. And so I'm curious what the two of you think because I know this story.
Yeah.
And I am now the horrible person who's just like, this is a little different from the book. And in the book, you know, like,
are you?
No one wants that Game of Thrones experience. Yeah.
Isn't it fun?
I will say, I think that the places they are deviating and riffing are really interesting. And
yeah,
I want to
talk about the most recent episode because I know that's supposedly totally off book. I watched it last night with someone who read the book and she was unimpressed by that episode.
Really?
I personally I felt better about it. Like, I did think it slowed the momentum, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I'm getting ahead. As usual, I'm skipping directly to the end.
So as two of you who didn't read it going in, what did you think?
I mean, I kind of had an idea of what I thought it was about, which was mostly right, and that it's a dystopian story where women are, like, hideously oppressed and forced to be, like, you know, broodmares, basically. But I thought it was going to be less clinical and religious in the way that it is sort of enacted, and more like they were, like, almost like a side piece, like an assigned side piece. So like they were more like okay, for instance, like I thought it was going to be more you know, Mad Max Fury Road, like how he has all his broodmare wives or whatever, and they're like, you know, like he has his favorites and like there's sort of a relationship dynamic there, one-sided, but as opposed to like, oh, this person is almost a tool and a dehumanized incubator that is trotted in once a month to have this thing done to her and taken out.
So,
and like, it's forbidden
it...
to have that relationship.
Yeah. So you thought it was going to be more in the like post-apocalyptic, like debauched kind of world.
Yes.
As opposed
I was not
to the...
expecting the Mike Pence of it all.
The Mike Pence of the tent. I know I've told you, like, the second he became the VP nomination, I was like, we're going straight to Handmaid's Tale. We're going
yeah,
straight
really,
to Handmaid's
that's
Tale.
The first thing that came into your head.
Yes.
Wow, that's so scary.
It is scary. Shit. I mean, it's absolutely terrifying. But the world building in this is incredible. And the level of detail, I mean, the way that Margaret Atwood's mind works is, it's mind-blowing.
That's why she's my favorite writer.
Yeah,
so
I mean...
good.
Okay, and the thing about this show, like, I think, here's what I think. I think the audience thinks that it is some kind of, like, ladies oppressed drama, and it is not. It is full-on dystopian religious horror.
Yeah.
This is the scariest thing that I have seen since I don't even know what. I literally, every episode, I think I have bottomed out with how horrified I can be. And they find a new way to shock and horrify me. When I say this is chilling, I'm not using it in the like, you know, metaphorical sense. Like, I literally get chills watching this show.
Yeah.
The one of the more recent episodes where we got the backstory of Serena Joy, and you realize how complicit she was in the creation of Gilead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was not expecting that at all. That was a shocking episode for me.
The absolute indictment of, like, conservative women who stand on the shoulders of feminists and, like, and degrade them.
Right, well, she's the Phyllis Schlafly. Like,
yes.
Because this was written in 84 or 85, right? So this is the Phyllis Schlafly.
And it made me think of, and obviously, hold on, let me pull up my notes on this. I'm not recommending the Dave Chappelle comedy special for obvious reasons.
Mm.
But there was one joke in it that I thought was one of his best jokes.
Yes,
one of his
that
most,
joke is great.
Like, it nailed it. And it made me, when I saw Serena Joy in the scene, I went, he's talking about you, bitch.
Yeah.
He says, he's having an argument with a woman in the audience saying, like, yes, you women are oppressed. I got it. And then, like, she keeps pushing. And his response is, at some point, he reaches a kind of a breaking point, and he says, come on, white woman. You know what it is. You was in on the heist. You just don't like your cut. And yeah. I was like, that is Serena Joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's so unhappy with her lot in life, but she was complicit in the creation of that.
Yeah.
I'm getting chills now. Just
and I really
thinking
thought because she was so unhappy with everything that was happening that she wouldn't have been so complicit. So I thought that episode really turned things around in my head about the way things were in the world.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a show that, like really crystallizes what, like the oppression of women around the world and in American history in a way that never did before, which is so like gross white feminist of me. I'm yeah. like a little bit ashamed to say it, but like, if I can't own it, I can't get like, you know what I mean? Like I can't get better about uh-huh. it, but yeah. like, you know, think about like in the history, U.S. history, let's do it. We got to do it. We got to go back to slave times where, you know, there was not female solidarity amongst white women and enslaved women. You know
oh,
what I mean?
No.
So like, we're all feeling like, oh God, how terrible to be totally dehumanized in this way. Like it is crystallizing for me what I thought mm-hmm. I already understood and did not.
Well, that's what I wanted to. Yeah, I'll be really interested after if the two of you read the books, because the race is dealt with very differently in the books.
Really? Okay.
And okay. this show is kind of, I'm ambivalent about how Atwood does it, and I'm a little ambivalent about how this show does it, mm-hmm. because in the second to last episode that we watched, so we're at now episode 7, there's one more. When we're recording this, there's one more left. So that's six.
Oh, wait, there's only one more episode?
Yeah,
I thought there was 10.
Of this season.
No, but I thought there was 10 episodes.
Oh, I think it's 8. You know it's renewed, though. I mean, you know there's going to be a
season
2. No,
I know, but I don't want to wait a year.
I know, right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to wait a year to feel this bad?
it is, honestly, I've never, like, I'm such a bottom for the show.
Yeah.
Like, it is,
yeah.
It is so punishing and so compelling. I like eat it fucking up, dude. It's so good. Yeah. 10 episodes. We have 3 left.
Oh, 10 episodes. I thought it was 8.
Nope. It's okay. 10. Confirmed 10.
Okay. All right, good. Sorry. But in episode 6, there's okay. the visit from the foreign dignitary yeah. who is a Latina woman
yeah.
who's coming to look at like the kind of culture of like the highly rigidified culture of white folks that she doesn't understand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, look, and I thought that the flipping of the gaze in that uh-huh. episode was really interesting in terms mm-hmm. of the way that white feminists have looked at like, say, veiled women forever.
Yep. Yeah. 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 Yeah, no, it did a great job. And that whole episode is, it's so heartbreaking. Like when she first realizes that they're the ones that are going to be traded when the other handmaiden tells her, like the look on her face is, I mean, they did a really great job with
yeah.
that. And then when she finally decides to ask for help and there is none, it's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were saying you had, I remember you had some concerns watching that. You wanted to know what I thought about the racial dynamics of that episode.
Right. So I can't decide if this is, it's both, right? It's both empathy building and peak white feminism, that it is more of a disaster that it's happening to white women.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, is there a, I shouldn't say that. Is there a way that the show is saying that this is like outrageous and a disaster and pearl clutching because it's happening to white women? What's happening to white women is something that happens to women of color all the time. You know, like historically, like you're talking about, yeah. like in the history of the US, people have 100% yeah. been owned by other people.
Uh-huh.
Right. Like the ways that, like the gaze, right, from a more, from a different country is looked at, like looks at women in another country and judges them. Like, is that more of a disaster because white women are enslaved in this show? Like, that's the part that I'm kind of grappling with.
That was not my feeling.
No, but not in the intent of the show, but in the way it's being received. Does that make sense?
I mean, I can only that the public speak is for receiving. Myself.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Here's the thing is I think I am a firm believer, and you kind of alluded to this already, that movies, films, things like this are, they're empathy machines.
Yeah.
They allow us to step into other people's shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you cannot watch this movie and not feel absolute horror and grief at it. And what I think it communicates, I think the lesson that is communicated by it even though it is absolutely essential for people who have not had to think about it before. And the way they're able to, maybe the way that they're able to interact with this is because they're able to see themselves in it. But yes. I also think this is the kind of thing that compels you to dig a little deeper. And the think pieces around this are so good. And
yeah.
the audience is so opened up in a way that they might not be before, that the net that it's a net positive. That's yes, my right. feeling around it. Like, I don't think that you walk away from this, both women and men, not seeing the horror in this. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to be able to see yourself in it.
Right.
And like, the audience of color doesn't need this lesson. You know what I mean? Like, they already know they live with personal oppression in our society.
Right. And I guess
it has to reach a different audience. And I think this one, it just like a slap to the face that may make you think in a way, reaching an audience that wouldn't necessarily be open to a different.
Yeah, I agree with that, because it's,
yes.
I mean, they're really talking about educated middle class or upper middle class white women and white men. And so if it can reach that audience, then I think that's a really great thing. And I think that one of the things I didn't know about the show going into it was how quickly these changes happened. Right. I thought that when we saw flashbacks to the past, it would be pretty far in the past that these things started. Mm-mm. The shifts in government, the shifts in religion happening. And the fact that it happens really quickly, I think, is a super important message for people to see. Because I think that when people talk about politics today, they don't recognize how quickly oppression like this can happen, how quickly government and religion can take over. And we've seen it happen in other countries and other points in history, happen like the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And I don't think people in the U.S. recognize that. So
if you are in the audience and you think that this can't happen, I need you to go to Wikipedia or some other site and Google. Look at Afghanistan in the 70s. It was an extremely cosmopolitan. It was the Paris of the Middle East. And a religious totalitarian government took over. And within a matter of years, women were veiled.
Or Iran.
And tell me that this couldn't happen.
Yeah.
Also, watch the fucking news. Watch the series of photos of rooms full of white men making plans for reproductive rights for women, and how that women don't have a seat at that table for their own bodies. Look at the erosion of the separation of church and state.
Yeah.
And tell me that we do not face this is a very real possibility. It seems absurd because it hasn't happened in America in your lifetime, but let's go back and look at American history. Like, this is not, it's not like we have some moral, high moral standing where we would, as an American, it would never happen. It's a free country. No, it fucking happened in America.
Yeah, and this
it's
is what
how,
I do
it is
like.
The foundational.
Yeah, this is what I do like about this show, is that it does kind of point to, like, oh no, this 100% happens here, because it's already happened here.
Yes.
Right? And I'm just thinking about that in terms of, like, my experience as a white woman watching it. Uh-huh. I just don't know if other people are having a similar experience. Right? Like, I'm wondering if my experience, I'm reading, trying to find other experiences of it, because I imagine they could be pretty different.
Hmm. Okay, so really quickly, we gotta let these girls come back. Mm-hmm. I just want to talk about how beautiful the show is.
Oh
my God, I know.
The costuming. I don't know why it took me a long time to notice that Serena, all the wives were green. And then I noticed the handmaids, obviously. But also the way that they're, what is this, like a wimple sort of isolates
the wings.
Them is incredible. And that I love how they've, the shots where they're just like practically on their face.
Yeah,
because so much of what they're doing, because they're so oppressed, all of that acting has to happen subtly in the face. And Elizabeth Moss is fucking crushing it.
Yeah, she really is.
And I was really surprised at Alexis Bledel, too. I loved her in Gilmore Girls, but I've seen her in other things, and it's sort of her playing her, you know, normal character.
Yeah.
It was so... She did such a good job. I mean, that scene after they do the forced genital mutilation, the looks on her face. I mean, she she really did a great job.
The casting of her is so fantastic because she is Rory Gilmore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and she has those big, gigantic blue eyes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But the way that it's shot, you can actually see, like, we all know Rory's face so well. And to see her face up close and how it is hardened in this, like, it is a absolute destruction of, like, innocence that we, like, culturally identify Rory as. So it's not just off Glenn that this is happening to. It's happening to Rory.
Yeah.
And it's, it is so incredibly powerful. That was, I like, I really didn't think that I could be more shocked than that scene, which is why this show is so incredible that it still manages. Like, in the most recent episode, I guess Melissa said she had seen it before, but, like, I saw for the first time the red tag and how it's, like, a plastic tag that you see on, like, livestock.
Yeah.
Like, the dehumanization of that tag. I was just like, a new low. We found a new low. Oh, it's so incredible. And
it really is
such a frightening show. Watch.
Yeah,
every horror fan should be watching *Handmaid's Tale*. It's the scariest fucking thing you've ever
I'm
seen.
I'm so glad you guys are liking it. I love it so much.
Oh yeah, I've been absolutely loving it.
And
you know, even as I express some like questions about how they're doing this one piece, I love it. I'm so excited about how they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally exceeding my expectations for, you know, when something's your like favorite piece of literature, you're like, oh my God,
absolutely.
Fuck it up. It's going to be terrible. Or, please don't ruin it. But I love it.
So, all right. So Handmaid's Tale, I think, is a pretty strong recommendation across the board. Super excited to think, Sarah, what you thought of it when you get a chance to get caught up, and Jody as well, because this is quite a piece of art.
Yeah.
And also just like media, you know?
Yeah. And look for Atwood's cameo in the first episode.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So what I've been watching really quickly, I watched a movie called The Void. Have you guys seen this?
Mm-mm.
No.
Well, okay. So I watched it because it's like Lovecraftian. It was created by a bunch of like effects artists and art directors. So it's gorgeous. It takes place in a hospital the night of like these cultists coming to like bring back something through the void. It's the special effects are really impressive. Lots of really great practical effects. So if you're an effects junkie and like really over the CGI, there's a lot here to enjoy. The story, on the other hand, not so strong. It definitely is like Carpenter's greatest hits / Event Horizon in a hospital.
Okay.
Like things really, visual cues and story plot points and things like lifted directly out of better movies that did it better. So okay. I can't like wholeheartedly recommend The Void, but there is a little piece of me that is like excited to see a movie that is so reminiscent of the ones I grew up on being made today. So I also can't totally say skip it. I say go in with very reasonably low expectations, mm-hmm. and you probably are going to find a lot to enjoy here because the art direction and the like costuming and the creature effects are really pretty great. All right, so the other thing I watched was a little movie called Prevenge. Jody, you also saw mm-hmm. this, right?
I did.
Okay, so I don't want to go too deep into this because I really want to do this as a double feature episode with Baby Blood. Because it's a story about a woman who is pregnant and she's being told by her unborn child to kill people. So, and I thought it's directed by a woman. The woman directed it and starred in it. Her name is, remind me, do you know? Off the top of your head, I can't think of what her name is.
Oh, what's her name? Alice Lowe.
Yes, Alice Lowe, mm-hmm. who I just rewatched some Garth Marenghi and she's like the attractive female lead in that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, Prevenge! But I really like this movie a lot. I look forward to you guys seeing it. I obviously I'm putting my thumb on the scale a little bit by even saying that. There is and I like want to be her for Halloween because there is a costume in the third act
mm-hmm.
that is incredible.
Yeah.
It's really like a dark comedy and kind of heartbreaking. And I know we're going to cover this more in depth later, so I don't want to say too much. But I really enjoyed it. How about you, Jody? What did you think of Prevenge?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I had high expectations and they were all met. I thought she was a great character, really likable. It was really funny and it was really sweet. And it was really, heartbreaking. Like you said, it's got a few Game of Thrones faces, which is quite a nice surprise to see some.
Oh, right. Yara's in it, huh? She's like the, she's like the mountaineer, like athletic triathlon lady.
Yeah. And we're
like, kill her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kate Dickie's in it too. And she's actually not breastfeeding for once.
Yeah.
Oh. Miraculous.
Yeah. I feel like there was one more. I can't remember who else now. But yeah, I thought it was great. I saw it with a friend from work who knows that I'm a big horror fan. And she was like, oh, I don't know. Is it going to be really like scary? And is it going to be gory? Or I don't know. And I kind of puffed my chest out and went, I can handle it, or whatever. And then the first scene takes place in a pet shop. And there's like a spider, like a tarantula right in the camera. And I'm like squirming. In
That's right. I had blocked that out. There's damn tarantula in this thing.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I think you guys would really like it, and I look forward to doing a full show on it for sure.
Has anybody else on the show seen Baby Blood yet, or am I still the only one that's seen that weird ass?
Seen what?
Baby Blood. It's like a weird French kind of gory, over the top movie about a woman whose baby is telling her to kill people so that because it needs blood, and it's dubbed. And the voice of the fetus is dubbed by Gary Oldman.
Oh my god. That sounds amazing.
And it's super gory and like splattery and weird. Super fucking weird. But I want to do that in Prevenge. Uh-huh. So nobody's seen it yet,
that
right?
Sounds great,
no.
Though.
Okay, for my pick, we're doing Baby Blood in Prevenge.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about the last thing we are planning for this episode, which I am dying to hear what Jody thinks. Yeah. And that is the latest in the Alien franchise, Alien Covenant. So, even though it's under my what I've been watching, Jody, why don't you take the lead on this one?
Oh, okay. I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
I like parts of it. Has everybody seen it? I don't want to ruin anything for people that haven't.
I haven't. Should I?
Yeah, if you want to duck out, that's fine.
Okay. All right. Just message me.
Okay.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but I'm going to say one thing, and I know it's going to be fairly controversial.
Uh-oh.
Everybody goes, oh, Ridley Scott. And I hear a lot of, I was really disappointed because it's Ridley Scott. But nobody stops to think that the first Alien had Dan O'Bannon.
Yep, and Dan O'Bannon.
Dan O'Bannon was the key to a successful Alien movie.
You are taking the words right out of my mouth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, Dan O'Bannon's just like, he's somersaulting in his grave.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dan O'Bannon's family. That was very insensitive. But I stand by it. Okay. So, all right. So this is obviously the sequel to Prometheus.
Uh-huh.
This is the, in the trilogy or whatever, or as I call it, George Lucas does the Alien series.
Yeah.
These are definitely Ridley Scott's prequels, right? Can we all agree to this?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I saw it with Matilda and friends, and we walked out of the theater, and everyone was kind of like, "Oh, I liked it." And I was like, "Killjoy over here." I was like, "I did not like it."
Well, I was like buffering.
Yes,
buffering.
Yes. Then you and I got like very angry over a couple of beers post.
Yes.
Post movie, like you were willing to give it a little more.
Yeah.
Whereas I was like. We always joke about like purity tests, right? Or like, and I don't necessarily believe in purity tests, except for when it comes to Alien movies. And
I agree, it failed a purity test for an Alien movie. Yeah.
Oh, yes, it did. So even the very, I was angry during the very first scene of this movie.
Oh yeah.
How about you, Jody?
Which one's the very first scene?
It's Wayland and David talking about creation.
Yeah. Surrounded by the great works of Western art
on the set of what is it, Ex Machina?
Yeah.
So like, here's my feelings about this movie. Let me start with the positives. Let's do that, and then we can go, I can
uh-huh.
go ham on this.
Yeah, it won't take very long.
Right, so the positives, I would say I did enjoy some of the setup of the characters on the ship. I thought some of those dynamics were interesting. I thought Daniels, our main female character, had potential to be a very interesting character. Like when James Franco, who someone, by the way, was like, my favorite part was that James Franco died 30 seconds into the movie. When, like, when he dies and her response is to kind of, like, get down to business, she's, like, the only person that has done her work at that point.
Yeah.
On the, like, that kind of stuff. And her interactions with Walter were kind of interesting. I felt like there was some hope for that there. I thought the scenes where they first land on the planet and shit starts to go crazy to be pretty good. I thought the, you know, the monster itself was, I mean, even though I didn't really like the CGI Xenomorph, I thought those scenes were pretty tense and interesting. And it harkened back to the things that I liked from the original Alien, of like, there's something on board and we are so in over our head and our response is absolutely counterproductive to this. I liked that. I enjoyed the role reversal in terms of the gender dynamics on the ship. There's a scene where Tennessee, who is freaking out about his wife being in danger on the planet, and he's making rash decisions based on emotion and overruling the people around him in a way that typically the hysterical is the female character in movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked that. The aesthetics of the sort of Pompeii remains of all of the engineers when they arrive at the, like, you know, home base of the engineers, who apparently just lived in one city on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
They're all the engineers all in one city on one side of the planet. That was kind of cool. Basically, everything minus the horrible opening scene up until the flare goes off, I was pretty okay with.
Oh, uh-huh.
Once the flare goes off and we have our caped crusader show up, I was like, oh, hell to the no.
Mm.
So those were my positives. Do you guys have any positives you want to throw in there before getting critical?
Yeah, I think it looked really great. I think I agree with you about the main character, Daniels. She was almost a really interesting character. I thought she was a little bit two-dimensional, but she was at least likable and you cared about her.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the music was really great, even though half of it was lifted from Alien, but that's okay. You know, it's meant to be the same universe, so that's fine. They made good use of that. And I thought it was really gruesome and graphic, like that, especially that first kill scene in the med pod.
Yeah, it's like bursts out of his back.
That was like when that guy's like spine falls out of his back. Me and Mr. Cody were like, shit, that's quite good. Like, oh my god,
that's good.
That's kind of where it ends for me, though, in terms of positives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Mm.
I will.
I would say similarly, like, I think the kill scenes were great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I actually liked some of the CGI on the different phases of development of the creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm pissed off that the face huggers don't have big 80s fingernails anymore. which is a very important factor to me. And I liked I particularly loved the like flying labia shot when he's down with the eggs. I really like that. But I think aesthetically, like I wanted more Geiger.
Oh,
And I wanted more claustrophobia.
Yes.
Yes.
Which the big Pompeii, as beautiful as that was, that planet didn't have the claustrophobia that I need in an Alien movie.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. So to my criticisms, I came out of that movie being very annoyed with the fact that Ridley Scott has decided to work out all of his fears of mortality and his, you know, declining virility in this movie, in an Alien movie, because that's not what I go to an Alien movie for. Like the scene at the beginning where, like, clearly both Wayland and David are the Ridley Scott ciphers.
Yeah.
He is the creator who is struggling with his mortality, and he is also the superior being and creation of Ridley Scott and Wayland is kind of obnoxious to me, because the show, the way that these new movies, or this one in particular, the way that it kind of sidelines its women while still like pretending that the women are the female lead.
I agree with that.
The beginning with the fridging of Shaw,
yeah,
which I found absolutely unforgivable. mm-hmm. undermines everything that I liked about Prometheus. Like, for me, Prometheus was the Elizabeth Shaw character.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it was the thing yeah. that pulled me through that and the aesthetics, right? But by fridging her the way that they did, and then also really kind of undercutting Daniels by pretending she's your main character, but really David is the new main character,
mm-hmm.
I found to be deeply frustrating, because that's not... I mean, like, I don't need my main character to be a woman, but I need my main character to be a Ripley. You know what I mean?
But, well, yeah, Daniels is just the way for David to talk to Walter about his humanity.
Exactly.
That's all she is, ultimately, which, mm-hmm. yeah, that's unacceptable.
I don't appreciate the re-envisioned version of the future and of corporate culture. If you go back to Aliens, it's all like these... like, you know, executives chain smoking in a dark room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now everybody is in like an Apple commercial.
Yes.
Everybody is a fucking Steve Jobs. And that is not the Weyland-Yutani of the Alien universe, in my opinion.
No, it goes closer to Ex Machina in a way that I don't like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, everybody is on a spiritual journey and not just like, you know, like, you know, cravenly bottom lining everything, which mm-hmm. I think is a much more interesting way to look at CEOs, especially. I feel like it's incredibly tone deaf in like our current culture. That, and also the like absolute master race sort of theme that is happening in this movie, that David, this white Nazi looking motherfucker with his bleach blonde hair, is the superior being, and he is the next evolution, then who must destroy his creators.
Yeah.
Is super gross.
I mean, I know we had that discussion right afterwards with Beards, and we were like, this is a little tone deaf and gross, like all the Master Race stuff and all that. But I feel, as I sit with it more, like I've been swayed that I think that he's more aware of it. I think he's trying to be critical of it, but I think he ultimately does the opposite. I think it's like, was it Natural Born Killers that was supposed to be like a critique of extreme violence and was just like a fucking orgy of extreme violence?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's what this is. I feel like it's supposed to be a critique of navel gazing and the smallness of like one man's consciousness, but it ultimately ends up being a celebration of navel gazing.
Yeah,
and
I've seen it praised as like an indictment of male fragility, and
I think you can read it that way, but I don't
buy it. I don't think that it's critical enough of that. Like, I don't think that if that's the message he's trying to send, I don't think that it's a clear message. And maybe because it's all encoded in this Ozymandias poem that they reference.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't have that, if you aren't, you know, an educated CEO in your future, you know, water space pad. Bow wow. That you're like these things are not like clearly illustrated. And it's done all at the cost of its female cast in a way
that
I think is super gross.
I feel like I would even be okay with all of that though if it wasn't in an Alien movie. I don't know why any of this belongs in an Alien movie.
Yes.
And I rewatched Prometheus not long ago because I didn't like Prometheus. You know, we talked about Prometheus before. And having rewatched it recently, I don't hate it as much as I used to, because it's almost a really interesting standalone sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
You know, they explore some very interesting things that you've been talking about, but it's crowbarred into this Alien universe where it doesn't belong. And I feel like Ridley Scott should have had the strength of his own convictions to just make a standalone movie, or even, you know, starting a little miniature franchise like this, because he's still a big sci-fi name, you know, and he made Blade Runner, which touched on some of these points as well. And I don't know why he felt that these ideas couldn't stand up on their own without being in the Xenomorph universe, because I don't think any of it belongs.
It fits better in a Blade Runner universe.
Yeah, I've heard that criticism too, and I agree.
You know what I mean? Where the synthetics are, like, destroying their creators.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like the synthetics are oppressed enough in the previous Alien movies to justify this kind of story, whereas in Blade Runner, where they're like hunted, and you know what I mean, and they like there's a greater animosity between the two, that it makes more sense. Whereas in this, I mean, like, Bishop is beloved, you know what I mean,
eventually,
well, I mean, not by Ripley because she has that experience with Ash, but like the crew all like Bishop, he's treated as a member of the crew, despite the fact that he's not human. By like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is a kind of a hate, not a hazing, but like a, like they, the same way that they treat one another, where they kind of like haze each other. They do that with Bishop. He's very much a part of the team. And so like, to me, that doesn't communicate a universe where like the, you know, oppressed David makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even Ash, even though we know he becomes a villain, he's not treated poorly by the crew in Alien either.
Yeah. No. Yeah, you're right.
You know? And it becomes kind of, it got a little Sorkin-y for me. Like, it got a little, like the dilemma of the great man.
Yeah.
Kind of. And I felt like this was a Ridley Scott problem rather than an Alien problem. I felt like it was an Alien movie, Jody, kind of like you're saying, like it's shoehorned in there.
Mm-hmm.
That like he keeps trying to wrestle the movie to a movie I don't want to see in the middle of a movie I do want to see.
Right. Yeah.
Like he's really interested in exploring this plot point that I'm could not be less interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, so my last critique, because I'm sure our audience is like, enough already, Rachel, calm down. It's just a movie. Is I feel like this really undermines the xenomorph. It takes what is this deeply alien, terrifying because of its alienness creature, and it makes it the creation of David. Mm. It makes it the creation of man in a way that robs it of its alienness. It robs it of the it being just sort of this vehicle of absolute terror. And like, you know, now it is something that has been engineered by the creation of man in a way that robs it of its.
I agree. That's so interesting. I feel like, to be very like feminist studies 101, it like robs the xenomorph of her agency.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the xenomorph queen. How does the xenomorph queen now fit into.
Right. She's just a creation of David, right?
Yeah. She's just like his fucking rib. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
As opposed to, one of the things that's so cool about Aliens is it's this like battle of the matriarchy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's all just sperm.
Right. So do we have to like have Ridley Scott show up and be like, I made that, you know? Right. Like, right. This feels like a little bit. Yeah.
And like the leaning away from the Geiger aesthetic is also a bummer.
Yeah, it's really
the thing that they held on to from Prometheus, which still had enough of that Geiger that I was like, I just want to be in this world and look at these things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know what I really like about this? Giant, like, Caucasian man faces.
Right.
Let's just put giant Caucasian man faces everywhere. I'm like, no, I want the, like, kind of weird, kinky, uncanny Geiger, you know? Right.
And I think he's trying to critique himself about that, about the like Mount Rushmore bullshit that we get.
I don't think he can.
But I don't think he's capable. Yeah.
So yeah, I was deeply disturbed, disappointed, not disturbed. I was deeply disappointed by this movie because I am not a fucking hater. I wanna love this movie. If somebody can tell me something that will sway me, man, I'm so fucking open to that. I wanna love it. Okay, one more thing. And I'm super fucking salty that these movies killed the chance of Alien 5.
Yep.
Yeah.
Super fucking salty!
No, I know. Because it's making me very excited about the new Blade Runner, because that's made by a different director who's, you know, our age and loved Blade Runner growing up. So he's like, oh, I can, like, I want to make a movie and I'm going to do it with love. And I think that's what Neil Blomkamp would have done with Alien 5 or Alien 2.5 or whatever it was going to be.
And it was gonna fix the problems of Alien 3. I mean, so we all agree this is it's fine as a standalone sci-fi. Like, I actually, as a standalone sci-fi, I'd be like, that's okay. It's an interesting meditation on getting old as a white rich dude. But
as an Apple CEO,
and it has some cool monsters, you know. Yeah, this is like in the mind of Steve Jobs. Okay. And in the same way that I appreciate Alien 3, where I'm like, okay, I don't really want this to be the end of Ripley's story, but it's a cool sci-fi movie with really interesting moments.
Uh-huh.
But if we can divorce it from canon, then I can enjoy it as like a, you know, like the Logan of the Alien franchise.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
that's fine. But if you are going to say no more Ripley stories so that I can make this, well, I'm showing up with pitchforks and torches, man. And I came home and I started reading all these articles about like women talking about how important Ripley was to them as a character, and I was like getting all choked up. I was like, she is very important. All right, anything else you guys want to say? I know I kind of commandeered this conversation. Jodie,
I mean, just one final bit about Alien Covenant. I think my main problem with this and with Prometheus in relation to the other movies is that I didn't need to be told any of this. I mean, because in the first movie, you don't know anything about the xenomorph, and then the second one, they kind of think, well, if these come from an egg, who's laying the eggs? And you go, oh, well, it's the queen alien, and that's all you need to know. I don't need to step any further back and figure out, well, where did that one come from and who created that? But also the way that all the characters interact with each other, you don't know anything about them in the first movie or the second movie, really, and you just learn about them from how they react to each other.
Yeah.
But in this, it was all, that's my wife down there, don't forget, that's my wife. Hey, don't talk to my wife like that. Hey, that's my wife. And you're going, okay, right, you're all married. That doesn't make me care about you yet. You could just all be colleagues and you're friends and you work together, and that's enough to make me care about you as human beings.
Yes.
And care about each other. You don't have to be, that's my wife, that's my wife, that's my wife.
Everyone has to lose their partner in this movie. I mean, it's really, it seems like overkill. I totally agree. Mm. That part of what was great about previous ones is like the way that the relationships with the crew develop as coworkers and like buddies in an enclosed space.
Well, it's like that family unit that you create in a workplace.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And I thought some of the banter at the beginning of the movie was quite good. It reminded me of The Abyss quite a bit, like that kind of interaction. And none of those characters, I mean, you know, they had the divorced characters in that movie, but it wasn't all, hey, that's my wife down there, don't forget. You know, I just didn't.
But you didn't care about them because they were divorced. You cared about them because you got to know them over the course of the movie.
Yeah.
And they did the show, not tell. Like, they're like, this is a tell, not show kind of movie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Damn you, Ridley Scott!
Yeah.
But thank you for the original Alien movies. But damn you for the new ones!
Yeah.
Like, I get why all of, like, the Star Wars nerds are mad now. Like, I feel like this is my.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, can Disney buy fucking the Alien franchise?
But I feel like even in Star Wars, we didn't have to just, it wasn't like George Lucas working out what he should have been just talking to a therapist about.
No. All right. Should we get the other girls back on the show, or is there anything else you want to say about Covenant? All right, cool. So I feel like this has been a pretty great discussion we've had about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap up this episode and we're going to talk about Nancy Thompson, one of the OG screen queens on our next episode. So no listener feedback this week, but we love to hear from you guys. If you want to get in touch, you can email us at rachel@zombiegirls.com. You can call us or text us at 1-678-694-7759, or you can find us on Facebook. We also have a Twitter, but let's keep it real, we don't really go on there that much. So find us on Facebook. If you're liking the show, do us a huge favor and head to iTunes and leave us a review. We do keep an eye on that, and if you do, we'll thank you on the show. So should we wrap this one up, ladies?
Sure.
All right. Jodie, take us out.
Oh. Thanks for listening to... Thanks for listening to Zombie Girls. We'll be back for episode 15 next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
The other day, there was a spider in the house. I had no one to kill. So I went into the shop vac, got it. I got, like, all the arm extenders, so it was, like, 30 feet long. And I sucked it off the ceiling, but I was afraid to turn the vacuum off, so I had to, like, take it outside while it was still running, and I just threw it out and closed the door and then unplugged it throughout the board.
Do you know that's how they get bees out of, like, that's how they remove bees? We had a bee colony in the wall.
With a shop vac?
With a shop vac.
It doesn't kill them?
No.
I knew it. It's not going to kill it. It's
bees may be different than, maybe sturdier than spiders.
Spiders,
too.
No.
I know the average that thing shop is vac, the way to the porch. It's set up is because the motor's in the lid, you just have a bucket, and what the filter goes over the motor, so nothing gets caught in the motor as it's pulling stuff in.
Right.
See, I fucking knew it. That spider survived.
So you now have a spider living in your shop vac.
It's on the porch. I haven't brought it in the house. Until I have, like, until I need, I'm, you know, like, I'm like, I need a trophy. I need to know it is dead. Like, when Randy kills a spider, I have to see that he isn't just, like, tired and doesn't want to talk about the spider anymore. And so I make him show me proof of it.
You're like, bring me the head of the spider.
Yes!
You who hate animal violence.
Well, yeah.
Want to see the body.
No, not animal. Right.
It's like that meme when I see a spider, I turn into a mob boss. Exactly. I want him dead. I want his family dead. His house burnt to the ground.
Yeah, I go full Trump on that shit. I don't like. I'm like, do we have a Moab? Because that spider is over a centimeter. And it, like they say, like for every spider you see, there's 10 you don't, right? So
I haven't heard that.
Well, you're clearly not running in the right spider circles, because we know.
you're know. Like Rachel's Spider Research Institute facts are really.
I say with love. With love.
You're gonna kill with love.
Love. Murder, just a little love murder amongst friends. Oh,